Joining me on the telephone is Joel Richard Paul. Joel Richard Paul is a professor of constitutional and international law at the University of California Hastings Law School in San Francisco. His latest book, and it's a good one, it's called Without Precedent, Chief Justice John Marshall and His Times. Joel Richard Paul, thank you for your time.
Thank you for inviting me.
Good to have you. What does, you know, again, as a constitutional scholar yourself, your book that I just referenced on John Marshall, considered perhaps one of the most important Supreme Court justices who made the Supreme Court as what we would recognize it today, what do you think this moment, this impeachment we're witnessing right now, means in the big picture of things when we talk about American political life?
I think historians in the future are going to have a very difficult time trying to encapsulate and explain what has transpired in the Trump presidency. It's very difficult to understand how this one man has so corrupted the Republican Party so that we now have these Republicans standing up and essentially defending what is clearly a Russian propaganda line that accuses Ukraine of interfering in our elections in 2016 and accuses the Bidens of something which we know they didn't do. And so it's a strange moment, I think, and a difficult one to understand. And I think years from now we'll look back and scratch our heads and just wonder how the hell that happened.
It's interesting, and we keep hearing references to how historians will look back at this time. But in a way, when we talk about that, and I've been guilty of it too, we say it as though future historians will be impartial in looking back at this time. But now that we have so many outlets, so many way of getting communications out there, we know according to what channel you watch is probably how one feels about this impeachment. You get a complete different story if you watch Fox News. I was thinking to myself this morning, what if future historians are in the same predicament? And, you know, we get this now, but I mean to the extreme version of, you know, there won't be this historical consensus in the future.
Right. I think that's an excellent point. But one hopes that at some point the fever will subside and people will be able to get a little distance from the drama of the moment. It's just hard for me to understand, based on the facts themselves, how you can defend the president's actions. The argument that the Republicans seem to be making repeatedly in these debates is that no crime was committed. But that's not the standard, and never has been the standard in impeachments. Going back to the very first impeachment, the impeachment of John Pickering, who was a judge in New Hampshire back in 1804, he was impeached for drunkenness. And then Samuel Chase, who was a justice of the Supreme Court, was impeached, and he was impeached for essentially being too partisan on the court. So it's never been the standard that you had to have committed a crime. When Andrew Johnson was impeached, he didn't commit a crime. He fired one of his cabinet secretaries, and that was the grounds for his impeachment. So I just don't know how you can defend this when the fever subsides. And we see that, in fact, all of the witnesses have lined up the same way. The White House has produced no exculpatory evidence. There's been no effort by the Republicans to explain what the motivation was for withholding the aid in the first place, or why the president suddenly released the aid, other than the fact that his corrupt bargain was exposed by a whistleblower. So I don't know how else historians can come out.
How about this claim that this is an illegitimate impeachment, even, and we've heard it constantly today in the debate from the House floor, but even Donald Trump yesterday in his 6-page letter to Nancy Pelosi said it was unconstitutional and illegal. Is there anything about the process that you've seen that would at least give some concern to an impartial observer who's concerned about how the Constitution works?
Right. Well, in terms of the process claims made by the Republicans, it's quite standard in any criminal investigation that initially you begin by taking depositions in secret because you don't want prospective witnesses coordinating their testimony. So that's what happened in the first stage in terms of the investigations by the Intelligence Committee. And then in the second stage of any investigation, we typically have a grand jury in which the defendant does not participate in the grand jury proceedings. And indeed, that's what happened in this case when the Intelligence Committee began calling witnesses publicly. Republicans and Democrats had equal time in both of those first two phases. In the third phase, when it went to the Judiciary Committee, the president and his attorneys were invited to come. They were invited to participate. They chose not to participate. So the procedural objections that the Republicans keep raising don't really make any sense, that this is all very standard kinds of ways in which legal investigations are conducted. I think what is significant to me is the unwillingness of the Republicans to allow witnesses to participate in the trial. I don't know what a trial is if it isn't an attempt at trying to substantiate facts. And if you don't have witnesses and you don't have evidence presented, then what is the trial going to be about? If it's simply going to be about a vote between, you know, shirts and skins, we don't need to have a trial. And that, I guess, is the impetus now for the suggestion that the Democrats might not allow the impeachment to go forward to the Senate. They may simply stop with the impeachment and not go through this farce of a trial, which Senator Schumer is now proposing.
That's interesting.
Senator Schumer, Senator McCain, I'm sorry.
Senator McConnell.
McConnell.
Yeah.
I apologize.
Oh, McCain.
I don't mean to speak ill of the dead.
Well, speaking of Mitch McConnell, I was watching him yesterday on the House floor. Basically, it was kind of comical if you watched it. He was basically laughing at the Democrats' call for the Senate to have witnesses at the trial that would occur in the Senate. And he was basically saying, you folks in the House couldn't even do your job, couldn't even prove your point. Now you want me to do it for you? Forget it.
Right, right. If you actually believe the president to be innocent, what is it that you have to fear in allowing witnesses to present testimony? I don't understand that.
One thing we've talked to other guests today about is somewhat in the speed that the Democrats are moving in this impeachment, especially pertaining to trying to compel witnesses, perhaps through the courts, people like Mick Mulvaney or John Bolton, Charles Kupperman, other individuals from the Office of Management and Budget, who seem to have firsthand experience of this pressure campaign against Ukraine, to have them come and testify. I mean, to me, that seems to be, I'm somebody who cares about how government works. And to me, that's been the bigger issue for me in this impeachment process. And as Congress is to hold oversight over the executive branch, and for the executive branch being able to say straight out, and for every request, we're not going to give you any of the documents you're requesting, and we're not going to allow any government officials to come and testify in your inquiry. That seems dangerous to me, especially in Congress's role of providing oversight of the executive branch, the balance of the three branches of government. Was it unwise for the Democrats not to resolve this by going to the courts to try to force the administration to cooperate with the inquiry?
Well, I think you make an excellent point. I think that if I had been asked my opinion, I think the Democrats should have slowed it down. I think that they should have waited to get a decision by a court. I'm I am confident that if the Constitution means anything, it means that the Supreme Court will decide that these subpoenas have to be enforced. It seems to me that likely that if Mr. Trump has nothing to hide in his financials, for example, he would have disclosed them years ago. The fact that he's refused to disclose his financials, the fact that it is likely that the court will hold that the financials must be disclosed, I think we're going to learn things there that could be very significant and maybe significant enough to persuade some Republicans to vote to remove the president from office. But of course, the other thing to remember here is that you don't get one shot at impeachment. Impeachments are like indictments. You can have multiple impeachments. If the president is not removed from office now, he might be removed from office in the future. If more information is learned about the Russian funding for the campaign against Biden, if more is learned about the president's financial interests in Russia, about possible conflicts of interest, about his involvement, about his violations of the emoluments clauses, these things can all be introduced subsequently to the House, and there can be another vote for impeachment.
I just wonder what this means for future presidents and the interaction between Congress and the executive branch concerning oversight. And if Trump is able to beat this, and he probably will be acquitted in the Senate, what that means moving forward on the type of oversight that Congress can conduct of the executive branch.
Right. I think that Congressman Schiff made an excellent point in his talk today on the floor when he said that someday members of Congress will rue the day that they dismissed these charges against Trump, because it does seem to me that Congress is not acting as the framers had intended to jealously guard the prerogatives of their institution against infringement by the president. And the fact is that we now appear to have basically a president who seems to have a lock on the United States Senate. It's a real shock to me. I don't know why people would spend all of that time and money running for office to the United States Senate just so they could be a puppet for the executive.
This is a change that I have seen in the previous decade on a daily. I covered Capitol Hill on a daily basis. I think politics were changing and starting to move in the direction that we'd see where things are at today. But you still had many old timers on Capitol Hill who were real institutionalists. And at times, many times, you got the sense that they were more, if they were a senator, that they were much more concerned and affiliated with the Senate as an institution rather than, say, a president of their same party.
Right. I think that was very true, and certainly there were members of the Senate like Senator McCain, and perhaps there are still members of the Senate. Mitt Romney today, who might be willing to cross party lines, who might show some leadership and some courage because they're such national figures that they perhaps have less to lose. I don't really understand why the overwhelming fear of being challenged in a Republican primary has created so much cowardice on the part of Republican senators. It's a real shock and a disappointment to me.
Could, and maybe it wasn't working before. We've never had the removal of a president from conviction in the Senate. Now, President Nixon resigned before he was actually impeached. Could this break the impeachment process, though? Could this make it irrelevant?
I don't think it's irrelevant, because I think that even if the president is not removed from office, as we don't expect him to be removed from office, I think it's an important mark that both in terms of the next election, I think voters will have on their minds, and it's also an important line drawing for history. It's a way of suggesting that future presidents should not cross this line. They should not seek to have foreign powers involved in our election. You know, in a funny way, Both parties should be careful what they wish for, because the reality is that I suspect that an impeached Trump going into the elections in 2020 will be a much weaker candidate than would President Pence if Trump were removed. I think President Pence might be a much stronger candidate for the Republican Party. So it's ironic that Republicans are fighting so hard to keep Mr. Trump in the White House, and Democrats are fighting so hard to make it President Pence.
To get him out, yeah. Joel Richard Paul has been our guest. Joel Richard Paul is a professor of constitutional international law at the University of California Hastings Law School in San Francisco. His latest book is called Without Precedent, Chief Justice John Marshall and His Time. Professor Joel Richard Paul, I thank you.
Thank you very much.